4:55, Friday, November 6th. Okay, we'll start. So the project is due tonight. Vic is here. He's actually had his head inside the code more recently than I have. So I thought if there were any last minute questions that needed to be aired publicly, it would be good to have him here. He can't stay all time, but any questions about how this works? Yeah. What are the local link, remote link things?
The local link and remote link as far as...
So local links are the ones that are attached to the individual router, and I presume remote links are ones that are elsewhere in the network.
They're used for calculating the port numbers on your local and remote routers.
Okay.
Add the local link to get to the port, and then
Add
the remote link.
Thank you.
that's in your code?
That's in my code, yeah. Yeah, so that's sort of just using numbers to figure out, link numbers to figure out port numbers by adding to the base port.
Yeah.
Locally and remotely. Okay, good. Yes?
I guess I have a question about changing the link cost to a higher cost.
Uh-huh.
Now, in the book it mentions cost to infinity.
Count to infinity.
Is like... I'm trying to simulate count to infinity, but I'm not getting it. Instead, I get the router to kind of...
It just convert...
incorrect state and stay there.
Oh.
So...
Well...
I have an example, but it's kind of long and complicated.
Okay. Well, it should end up in the right state.
Okay.
So...
I guess it's like... when I recalculate the distance vector, it still uses the old cost from one of the other routers to... try to determine the best cost.
And
so, I guess, yeah.
Oh, okay. So nothing changes.
Yeah, because it still thinks it can get to another router through an old cost.
Right, but that other router should itself get...
you're not adding your own yourself into the cost again.
Maybe. I guess
I'd have to... Yeah, you're going to have to work through it, but it should work. I mean, it won't necessarily count to infinity. It'll count to...
But it should either count to infinity or be correct.
Or get to the correct result. Well, and infinity is a correct result when it's completely disconnected. Yeah. Yeah. Should do that. Okay. Any other... Yeah. Yeah, make files, Python scripts, shell scripts, whatever. I think I would gravitate toward using a Python script at this stage in my life instead of a shell script. Anything else? Okay, so back to work.
Yeah, I'll be in my office today. I'm a little busy today, but if you definitely come by.
Okay. Okay, so meanwhile, we'll go on with Chapter 6 and talk about mobility. Before we talk about mobility, I'm just going to do a minimum amount on the cellular internet access. It turns out it comes back in later when we talk about mobility more generally. And there's just one slide I want to show here. about this. There's a lot of, well, I'll show you on the next slides. I just wanted to show this picture that it introduces some terms that we'll need later. So one of them is the idea of a mobile switching center. So you've got a cellular network. It's got a whole lot of radio towers spread around up and down the highway, around the community, and so forth. And they use a semi-centralized approach to managing that, and which happens to be called this mobile switching center, that has a global view over some subset of the cells. Okay? And so different sets of cells may have different mobile switching centers, and the mobile switching centers are interconnected through the telephone network. So mostly I just wanted to introduce this mobile switching center terminology. It's really there that the high level smarts exist in the cellular network to handle your moving around between cells. Okay. So then in the book, there's a whole lot of stuff about sort of how it works, but it's such a high-level view that it doesn't give me any great confidence that you learn anything by reading it, right? So if you really want to know about this stuff, you're going to have to go a lot deeper than what's in the book, and so I'm just going to go over it without sort of talking about it, because I'm not personally familiar with the details of how that works, and I don't think the authors of the book were either. They just felt like they had to throw something in. Anyway, mobility is more interesting. So this is, mobility is the question of how do we manage to walk around even internationally with our computers and still connect up with them as if we were at home. Let me get the door. And if you think about this, you start to see that there are quite a few problems associated with it. And it sort of depends on what you want to accomplish with your mobility. So we have the kind of mobility where we can walk around and connect up to different networks. Right? And this is what I usually do. Right? I take my laptop somewhere and I connect up to a network. When it's connected to that network, it's on that network. It has no relationship to how it is when it's on the home network. And so from the network perspective, that's not really mobility at all. Okay, that's maybe from my perspective, but not from the network's perspective. But if I wanted to stay connected all the time that I was doing that, or I wanted to have TCP connections that persisted across moving from place to place, that would be a whole different issue. And it's in this space that we're starting to talk about now, that kind of mobility where it's the same kind of thing that you have with the cell phones, right? You're in a conversation, you're driving along, you don't want to have to redial the phone conversation every time you change cells. So, same sort of idea. Okay, so there's some terminology that's developed associated with this sort of high-level mobility notion. There's the idea of, for a particular session anyway, the device has a home network. Right? So this is the place where it sort of starts up its life as a device. And on that home network, it has a permanent address. And that's called the permanent address of the device. And when it starts to move, then we need some help from the network. And the help from the network comes in the form of what's called the home agent, which is another program running on the home network. It stays there. It doesn't move when the mobile computer moves. Okay? So it will be helping out in what we're doing later. Okay, so we go to another network, and on the network that we visit, the visited network, we acquire what's called a care of address. So if somebody wants to send to us, they're going to use that address on that care of network, but we got to figure out how that's going to work. So that's what we're going to be talking about, is how do we get things that were supposed to go to me over here to actually be delivered over here. And to help me out with that, I'll have a care of address, and I'll also have help from a foreign agent. Okay, it's not a spy, it's just an agent on the visited network that helps out in the same way that the home agent does. And then our correspondent is the computer out somewhere in the internet that wants to talk to us while all this is going on. So, all right. So, the analogy here is you've got a friend traveling around the world. How do you find her? Different ways. Right, you can sort of search the world for her. That doesn't seem like it works very well. Call her parents, maybe her home agent, her parents. Or maybe she just tells you where she is. And the world is sort of evolving in maybe this direction for people, but that one exists as a way. So one idea, and this is sort of the one that to telegraph the answer, isn't going to work very well, is when this host gets over here on this network, you just let it advertise its permanent address out into the world. Okay? So the router on this network says, oh, now I have a /32 address that says, all traffic for that address needs to come to me. You could do that. You wouldn't last very long. Okay, so what does that boil down to? That boils down to, as more and more computers get to be mobile, all the computers in the world get entered in, all the routers in the world as entries in the routing table. Okay? That's not going to work, right? We're going to have hundreds of millions of routing table addresses in every router in the world, all pointing off in different directions to get traffic where it needs to go. It just doesn't scale. Okay, so the network sort of has to more or less bug out of this process, and we have to have the end systems, the computers and the agents, taking care of it without the knowledge of the network, without the knowledge of the router. When we do it with the end systems doing it, we have two approaches that we can take. One is that we say, well, we always know where that home agent is, and we'll arrange for the home agent to know where we are. So our correspondent will send traffic to the home agent. The home agent will send it on to the mobile device, wherever it is. That has the appealing property that the correspondent actually never knows that you're mobile, right? Because the traffic that goes to the home agent, the traffic for the correspondent is always just addressed to your own address, and it doesn't find out that you've moved. The other possibility, the downside of that, of course, is that the traffic has to go to the home agent first and then be routed back through the network to get to you. It can take longer than it would otherwise. The other possibility is the home agent actually tells the correspondent where you are, and then the correspondent takes on the task of actually addressing traffic to you at your new address. So both of those can be done, and they sort of correspond to the difference between what happens when you move, you know, and you leave a forwarding address with the post office for a while. The mail that goes to your old address actually gets sent on to you, but in the case of the post office, they also tell your correspondents what your new address is, so that after a while the traffic is going directly to you. The mail is going directly to you. Okay, so I did this. So, what happens? My mobile device goes out and lands on a new network, and upon getting there, it contacts the foreign agent on that network and says, I'm here. Okay? And here's my home address, and here I am on your network. I've now got an address on your network. The foreign agent contacts the home agent and says, okay, now we know where this mobile device is. And so now the home network knows where we are. It turns out that this foreign agent idea doesn't necessarily have to be a device different from the actual mobile computer. You can sort of collapse this and have the foreign agent run on the mobile device. So that's nice, because it means you can visit a network without having to have support already existing in the network and still pull this off. You do need to have some device over here in the home network, though, because you can't be in both places at once. Okay. So, now when we have a correspondent who wants to talk to us, what happens? They address the traffic to the home address. The home agent gets it. It says this mobile node is not present on this network anymore and is actually over there on that foreign network, and so it forwards the traffic. Now, let's see, there was something I wanted to say about that. Oh, yes. So, this picture is a little bit incomplete. The question is, and this is a question you should be able to answer, I think. The question is, traffic arrives here at a router, and here, I need to draw another picture. This picture is a little misleading. Really, the traffic arrives here at a router. The home agent doesn't necessarily have to live on the router. So it arrives with a particular IP address in it, say. And how is the router supposed to find the home agent? The local router is supposed to find the home agent. It's got an IP address. It clearly belongs on this network. Something has to happen here, right? The home agent has to advertise itself as owning this IP address. What protocol? ARP, right? Right. The router says, "Where is that IP address?" The home agent says, "I'm it." Okay, it's lying, but it's a good lie, right? says, "I want to get that traffic and forward it onward to the other side." Made all those points. As observed here, the traffic is taking a longer path than it needs to, perhaps, in order to get to the destination when it first goes through the home agent. I object a little bit to this bullet. It says inefficient when correspondent and mobile are in the same network. Well, yes, it's inefficient in that case, but it can be inefficient in other cases too. They don't have to be in the same network. They just need to be in nearby networks that are closer than this path, and it's being inefficient. We're going to talk how this gets realized in actual mobile IP here in a moment. Okay, if you keep moving and move to another foreign network, you sort of do the same thing over again, and you know, in the case that you're using forwarding by the home agent, everything just continues to work fine. And you can continue to maintain your connections. So I have another thought about that to offer here in a second. So direct routing, you find out where he is and you just start talking to him. You can't do that transparent stuff when you're using direct routing because if this guy moves, things are not good unless the first foreign agent sort of takes over the role of being the home agent and provides forwarding services into the future. Okay, so you can switch from direct routing to routing with forwarding at some point. Right. The initial idea was the correspondent talked to the home agent, he forwarded it over here, and then it came back this way. But if you implement direct routing, then there's the problem, what happens if you move again? Well, we sort of revert back to forwarding style routing, but now using the so-called anchor foreign agent as the forwarding agent rather than the home agent. Okay? So in the case that you only move once, this is better. In the case that you move a lot, it reduces to the same thing that you had before. Okay. So how does this get turned into protocols in IP? Those were the general concepts. This is the usual way we do things in this book. We talk about the general concept, and then we talk about how it shows up in the internet standards. The usual stuff. But we can dive in a little bit deeper and look at how the packets actually appear as they flow. So you address a packet to the permanent address, the home agent responds to an ARP for that and sort of grabs that packet. It tunnels it. We've talked a little bit about tunneling by taking a complete IP packet that you got from here, drawn here. You take this whole packet and you stuff it into another one. And then you're able to send that onward to the foreign agent, who strips off the encapsulation stuff and delivers the original packet up to the mobile host. Okay? It's very straightforward. Just exactly what you'd expect it to be, especially once you sort of subscribe to this idea of encapsulation of complete IP packets. It's really quite a marvelous invention in some ways, because it gets used for this, it gets used for virtual private networks and tunneling, multicast tunneling, all kinds of things that good things happen when you take a whole IP packet and stuff it inside another one. Okay. Okay, how do you find the agents? There's actually a ICMP protocol, or ICMP message defined for doing that. You can broadcast these as an agent on a network, and the hosts that show up will hear them, and if they want to use those services, then they can make use of them. Nothing deep there. Registration messages. Defined protocols for what the mobile host says to the foreign agent, and what the foreign agent then says to the home agent, and an acknowledgement process. It's nothing deep. So, the thing that I wanted to add to this is, more recently, people have addressed again this issue of how to do mobility when you're really, really mobile, right? When you're moving around a lot. And this forwarding starts to break down just because you're going through too many hops along the way. And so just very recently, and just in the last month, I read about a new protocol that's experimental IETF protocol called the Host Identity Protocol or Host Identification Protocol. And the idea of this is to separate which host am I talking to from how do I get packets to him. To a destination host. So think about what we've done enough now to see what the issue is here. When you create a TCP socket and bind it in the socket interface, what do? You say, I'm binding this TCP socket to a particular port number and a particular host address. It can be deferred until you actually connect to the TCP socket. But once the TCP socket is connected, it's identified by the two end host and port combinations, right? Those four numbers. That's what constitutes a TCP connection. And so that's kind of an identity, right? That's the identity of the TCP connection, which is intimately intertwined with how do we get packets to either end of the connection, right? The IP addresses, they're used for routing in the network. So, and that's a problem here in these mobility pictures, because if I change IP addresses, I somehow have to arrange to keep having the old one for the duration of the TCP connection, That's what this picture allows. Is I keep ownership of my original IP address in some way. And the home agent fudges the world around me so that holds. But the guys doing host identity protocol said, identity and routing are two different things. So how about we cook up a way to have TCP connections be associated with a host identity instead of an address. So what is a host identity? What is then a host identity? They have a cryptographic scheme that sort of conjures a host identity out of random numbers, essentially. So I just more or less pick a random number and that out of a huge address space, and that becomes my identity. And they interpose, you have your application, you have TCP, they interpose the host identity protocol below TCP so that the application now interacts with TCP in terms of the host identity and port number instead of the host address and port number. Okay? And as far as TCP is concerned, everything it's seeing is in terms of this host identity number. And so a TCP connection doesn't care what the IP addresses are that are being used. So this is kind of neat, because now I can take my host and I can move it over here, and I can just switch to using the address on the foreign network underneath the TCP connection, and it stays, it maintained. It can be maintained across that move. And we lose all of this stuff about forwarding of traffic once the connection is set up. We're still, of course, at the mercy of the home agent to help us get set up in the first place, right? Because the correspondent is going to look up my computer address and say, oh, he's at EECS, and maybe I'm not really there, but somewhere else. And the home agent will still participate in that setup process. But once the connection is established, it's in terms of this host identity instead of the address, and then I can move around. So that's kind of cool. And this is sort of brand new stuff. The Linux Journal that just came out has an article about this. And it's not standardly part of the kernels for either Linux or Unix or Windows at this point. It's still experimental, but there's a project going on in Finland to build, you know, all the stuff that's related to this and get it out there into the world. So I thought that was kind of neat and highly relevant for this class. Okay. We did this. Okay, in the cellular world, things are pretty similar. This is just another version of the picture we saw before. Remember, the MSC is the mobile switching center. Each cellular provider has its own cloud of switching centers and cells. They talk to each other over the wired phone system, and you can sort of imagine how it works and get pretty close, I think. You subscribe to cellular service on a particular carrier's network. That carrier maintains essentially the home agent for your phone, which is in a database now. They have, you know, they're maintaining tens of millions of phones, so it's a lot more complicated than just a single Ethernet segment now, that we're maintaining a lot more information about voicemail and all that stuff. And in addition, it keeps track of where you are, so that when you visit either someplace on their network or some other carrier's network, the home network becomes aware of where you are, and when somebody dials your number, it gets referred to the home network first, which then figures out where you are and forwards on the traffic. So nothing. It's really the same picture, it just has different names. Okay. Routed to the home network, forwarded to the visited network. Again, the other question is, within a particular network, as you move from cell to cell, how does that handoff work? You can read about it in the book. I think it's just a sort of very detailed protocol about when does one cell start take over from the other one, and how is that coordinated? The mobile switching center has a role in that. The handset. Initiates the handset or the base station that you're currently in range of initiates the handoff. The switching center decides which new cell is going to be the one that you're connected to next, and initiates reservation of resources and the like for there. Once that's all ready, you say, okay, we're ready to go now. The old cell says to the handset, okay, now you're supposed to switch over there, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just a complicated little dance that goes on. And I'm sure it's very subtle as you consider the effects of signal strength and signal fading and all this stuff, but at this level it seems pretty straightforward that it's just a coordinated handoff. If you're moving from one mobile switching center to another, we use the forwarding chain idea that we saw over in mobile IP and mobile computer networking, same idea. We continue to have the correspondent talk to the home MSC who chains it through the other ones. Although they do have some additional protocols for short-circuiting that and skipping over some. You know, it's just, again, this is very 20,000-foot view of what's going on. And you can compare the way it works in the phone system to the way it works for mobile IP, and you see a lot of analogies. Cool. Okay, so we're coming to the end here of the chapter. Let's just step back and take a summarizing view of what we've seen. So putting wireless link layers underneath the IP network and transport layers would seem to be a natural thing to do, right? It's just another kind of link. But we've seen that it's a little different in that the kinds of errors that occur on wireless links are different from the ones that occur on wired links. And in particular, there's this problem of destroyed packets due to interference. So you have to be careful, particularly with TCP, that you make sure that you understand that's happening, because interference-caused packet loss is not the same as congestion-caused packet loss, and TCP was designed to interpret packet loss as congestion. So that's why we see in 802.11 networks and the like more attention paid to doing retransmissions at the link layer than you ever see in wired networks. Wired networks are extremely reliable, and you know, if there's no collision on an Ethernet, then you know, with very high probability, the packet actually gets through. If there is a collision, the Ethernet is sort of already designed to do the retransmissions in that case. So it's similar, I guess. The link layer, the idea of the link layer is to get a high enough probability of delivery in the absence of congestion. And you don't want to fall back on TCP congestion control or TCP reliability, because TCP is going to interpret that as congestion. For UDP, of course, UDP doesn't have any reliability mechanism built into it, and so that's relegated to the application. And you know, what I've seen happen there is that an application just isn't prepared to deal with the error rates that are occurring on a wireless network, and it breaks, right? Because you make some assumption about error rates when you code things, and if that's violated, then your application is operating outside of its specification, and what it does is maybe undefined. Okay. There's no slide here. Let's think about the impacts of mobility on the higher level protocols. Well, we sort of talked about, we talked about the case for TCP, that it expects the IP address to remain the same underneath it while the connection persists. If that doesn't hold, the connection breaks. Okay, so and then the application sees a broken connection, and so you code into your application the logic that needs to reestablish the connection using new addresses. So applications that aren't prepared to do that, you know, break when you move. And people like us who sort of know how all this stuff works, you know, we're happy to say, okay, so I moved the computer from one place to another and the application broke. But, mom and dad and grandpa probably aren't so forgiving and don't know what to do and don't understand why it happens. So work on things like host identity protocol that can make that stuff more transparent for the applications, so that the applications don't have that bad behavior. Okay, that's the end of Chapter 6. So next time we'll move on with Chapter 7. Which is, I don't remember. I think Chapter 8 is security. Oh, Chapter 7 is multimedia networking. So we'll talk about the performance requirements of multimedia, the protocols that are used to manage and achieve that. So that's where we're headed, and then we'll do security last. Okay, so next week, we'll just start in on that. Do turn in your assignments tonight, please, and we'll get Vic going on reading those. Very good. Thanks. Have a great weekend.